Yes, this is Julio Martinez, and I have my own show for half an hour, which means the summer membership drive is over. I'll be followed by Donna Walker's Pacifica Performance Showcase. And in studio today, I have two of the cast members from last summer at Bluefish Cove, which I first saw in 1983 when it had its West Coast premiere at the Fountain Theater. It was so popular it moved to the Cass Theater, and I became the publicist about that. But right now, I want to talk to Anne Somerville. Hi.
Hello.
I can hear you. And Noelle Messier.
Hi.
I can hear you too. Now, Anne, you played Lil, the central character in the play.
It's true.
How did the play come to you? How did you discover it?
I actually saw the audition notice in Actors Access Breakdown Services, and I submitted. I had never heard of the play. And boy, the history behind it. I can't believe I had never heard of it, which I think is a sentiment that's been echoed by a lot of us in the cast and in the crew. It's a really tremendous story, and it has a really fabulous history.
Yeah. Noelle, how did the play come to you?
Kind of the same way. I saw the casting notice. And I looked at it, and I saw a play for 8 lesbian women. And I was kind of like, whoa, how do I not know this play? This sounds familiar, but I don't know this play. So I immediately went to the physical library, which I hadn't done in a while because I couldn't find it online. And I ended up with a 1983 copy of it, of the production from the Fountain Theater 40 years ago. And I read it and I was like, oh my God, I need to do this play. And I submitted and thankfully ended up with an audition.
Well, your director was Hannah Wolf. I have to ask you, what was the first rehearsal like when you ladies all got together and did your first read?
It was pretty fantastic, actually, because none of us had met before. Even in the audition, we had all pretty much auditioned separately. A couple people had been kind of in the same group, but most of us had been totally separate. So we hadn't met. We all immediately fell in love with each other, I think, which was amazing. Yeah. And we did the read, and just watching, it was like all these diverse, different, tremendous, beautiful, talented women. It was so exciting, and the energy was just like off the charts.
Now, this play is not done like most plays. You're outdoors. The Fountain Theater is a lovely two-theater house, but they're indoors, 99-seat and a 50-seat house. And they decided to create the outdoor space during the pandemic. And not only are you outdoors, but the audience is asked to wear headphones. That is a different experience. How did the rehearsals go? What was the energy like knowing that you could speak differently? You could speak in a normal voice. You didn't have to project across a theater. Did it cause any problems or?
I don't even know if we knew right away. I was not aware away that we wouldn't have to project in the same way that we would have to do for a larger indoor or an outdoor space. Yeah. So there was definitely an adjustment period, especially once we hit Tech Week and started. I had never worked with in-ear monitors before, other than outside of ear prompting for industrials. And so I'd never been on stage in my own head, mic'd with all of the other actors in the same position.
It was very strange in the beginning. And I think we had to rehearse in the beginning because we didn't have the we didn't have the microphones. Mm-hmm. We had to rehearse as you normally would.
Yeah.
And then once we got the microphones about a week before opening, suddenly, you know, Hannah was like, okay, we need to adjust now because now we can play. We can whisper. We can say mm-hmm. things, you know, very intimately. So it changed everything. For me, I had a heck of a time keeping those things in my ears. I had to literally tape them in there. And then I literally lost hearing in one ear because I had so much earwax in my ear. I had to get my ears cleaned out. They're fine now. But so, yeah, it's definitely an adjustment.
We had to stay nimble, which was very exciting to do. I love a challenge. And to be able to combine, I actually do a fair amount of voiceover work, have been doing through the years. And so to be able to play with that more intimate element of the voice while still maintaining a physicality large enough to read in a space that size was not something I'd ever been asked to do before. It was a lot of fun.
The other great thing is that they're live mixing it.
Yeah.
So the music is getting mixed in with the waves, the sound effects with the waves, and we're hearing all of that. So it also kind of puts us in a particular place also. So I definitely love that. And I've gotten used to being able to hear myself so I can kind of enjoy that I can play with that a little because I do voiceover as well. So I'm fine with that part. Yeah.
I find it very interesting that in my situation doing theater like this, if they're using a lot of intimate technical equipment, the technical equipment generally goes wrong sometime.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had any breakdowns during performance?
We do have a really fantastic team that is on top of if something starts to happen, they're fixing it in real time with us.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had my mic go out once, but that was because I leaned on it in the couch. And once I sat up, it was fine. It's actually been running pretty smoothly.
It's been pretty. It's kind of amazing how smooth it has been running. Although we have little signals and whatnot. So just in case somebody's mic goes out, somebody can like duck off stage or go into mm-hmm. the bathroom or something, and then literally the tech will run out there because they're watching the whole time and we'll fix it if we run into a problem. We've had some problems with, you know, a mic not coming up or this or that, or, you know, I had to wear my pack outside of my belt because my belt was interfering with the pack. So, but it's kind of amazing. The audiences, the people that I've talked to absolutely love it because they can hear every little word, all the sounds, everything. And it really cuts out the noise because we're in the middle of Hollywood. There's cars, motorcycles, fireworks. I mean, we've had just about everything, car radios, you know. So it also helps us kind of stay focused in the moment also. So I really like it, actually.
All the times I saw last summer at Bluefish Cove, because I had to see it a lot, being the publicist for it, I was very always taken with the distinctiveness of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular case, you have Sarah Scott Davis playing Kitty Cochran. Can you describe her character?
Elegance and fire.
Perfect. Yeah, love it, love it.
And Tomika Cotton Donegal.
Tomika.
Tomika, yes.
Yeah, she plays Rita, and Rita is the girlfriend of Kitty, and she is, gosh, how do you describe her? Very
Rita's brilliant in her own right.
Right. Bookish in a way, like she's keeps Kitty grounded.
Yes.
Yeah.
And is an excellent partner and caretaker for Kitty, I think, as well. They balance each other very nicely.
Yeah.
And then there's the great hook of the play. Eva Margils plays Lindsay Lavanchi.
The other way around.
Lindsay Lavanchi, yeah, plays Eva Margils. There we go. And Lindsay, Eva, the character, is a straight woman who comes to Bluefish Cove by accident, not knowing it is a dedicated lesbian hangout for the summer. Mm-hmm. And that's the crux of how the play moves.
Yes, yes.
And I thought it was a very interesting dynamic as that evolves through the play. It's well written to allow her to evolve.
Absolutely.
And you have to handle that a lot.
It's true. One of the things that struck me about this story as I was getting to know it was it's not only a love story between Lil and Eva. It's also a love story with Eva and herself, with this entire group of women, with these people that are chosen family. There are love stories all over this play. They pop up in every corner, which I just think is tremendous.
Yeah, I do too. And actually, I think, one of the biggest love stories in my point of view, because I play Annie, who is Anne, who plays Lil's best friend.
Oh, yeah.
And the love is so in that play and just influences everything Annie does in that play. And it's such an expression of love that... I don't know. It's
Annie's Lil's rock.
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
And then one of the more interesting and fun duos is Sue McMillan as Sasha Serdike and Donna Adderley as Stephanie.
Again, I'm
reversing them. Sasha Serdike as Sue McMillan and Stephanie Pardee as Donna Adderley.
Correct.
And this is an old... a May-December romance where Stasha plays a well-to-do woman and Stephanie Pardee is a bit of a hanger-on, maybe a gold digger. She might be a number of things, but they do adore one another.
Yes, yes. Yeah, my character likes to call her all sorts of names, but we won't go there.
And then finally, there's... get this right. Ellen D. Williams as Ray.
Yes. Yes.
Meshing these characters together, I've been always attracted to the play because it works. And you believe it as it's developing, and you believe where it goes at the end. The ending is determined by something we discover right at the beginning, and that's the fact that Lil is not altogether well.
Yeah.
Yeah, we won't give away too much, though.
No. And how that evolves forces the women to go through many changes in their own evaluations of their lives and each other, and how the play ends. So... that is Last Summer at Bluefish Cove. And I want to take this moment to say the play is running through August 27th. It hasn't extended, has it?
No, not. No, I think they're kind of stuck with a certain time period because we're outside in the summer. So I think that's kind of a hard out unless we were to move somewhere else, is my guess.
And it's a different kind of time period because you play Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays, and Mondays at 7 p.m.
Correct.
Because you're outdoors and you're waiting for the evening's lights to go around.
Yes, that's part of it. And it would be awfully hot if we did it in the middle of the day.
And the Fountain Theater is located at 5060 Fountain Avenue. That's at Normandy in Hollywood. And you can get information by going to www.fountaintheater.com or you can call 323-663-1525. That's 323-663-1525 to get tickets. Or you can listen to me as I tell you that the producers are offering two pairs of tickets free to listeners and members of the KPFK family. You have to be a member. You have to support our station. And the number to call is 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735. And as my theme music goes underneath, I'll have to let you know you are listening to KPFK.org 90.7 FM. If you're in the Santa Barbara area, you're listening to us to 98.7 FM, San Diego, 93.7 FM, and in Ridgecrest, 99.5 FM. Now, these tickets are at 7 p.m., and there any performance as of right now, except next weekend when there's going to be a special invitation only crowd that's going to welcome back the original, a good number of the original members of the cast who were doing it back in 1983, including Gene Smart. But please call 818-985-5735. We have two pairs of tickets. And I am talking right now to Anne Sunneville and Noel Messier. Woo! And this is the part of the show where I talk about where you guys come from. Noel, how did you get your start in theater?
Oh, boy. It goes way back, way back. Well, actually, I remember in junior high school, I did a, the very first thing I did was a play in French of Snow White. And I know, except I played Sneezy. I was one of the dwarfs. So that was my first taste. And then I kind of went on, got hooked in high school. And started doing, you know, all the plays and musicals and whatnot. And, geez. And then I went on to, for a while, I was into musical theater. And I went to Boston Conservatory of Music, but discovered I couldn't dance real well. So, and I always had an upper range and a lower range and had a hard time getting in between, which has kind of been the story of my life in general, is finding my in between. But I kind of cut out of that and decided, okay, I can't do this. I ended up getting a degree in television production, worked in that for a while from Emerson College. And then I got out of theater for quite a few years. Then I got back in. I went to New York for a while. I studied Meisner technique at William Esper Studio. Then I got out again. I kept going back and forth. I got a degree as a veterinary technician at one point. Then I got back in. I just kept trying to escape. It's a really difficult. It's a really difficult career. But in the past 10 years here in LA, I've kind of committed to it's what's in my heart and it's my love, and I just love artistic expression in many different forms, because it informs me about me and figuring out how to find my middle and find my peace in life. And the best thing has been acting to do that. And so it's, I don't know, I just do it and I love it and that's it.
You're Canadian, aren't you?
I'm not Canadian. My father is of Canadian descendancy, and my mother is Italian descendancy. Oh. So, yeah.
I was just wondering, do you speak French?
Not really, actually. I mean, I took it in high school and, you know, in junior high. That's how I ended up in the little French play. But, yeah, no.
Anne Sunneville.
Yes.
Where are you from?
I am from Moline, Illinois. Our claim to fame, it's the home of the John Deere tractor. And my first play I ever did was actually in Davenport, Iowa, at Davenport Children's Theater called Junior Theater. And it was called The Numbers Game, and I played a robot prisoner.
Fantastic.
And then my first main stage show was The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and I played a tiny Cockney dwarf, and I had facial hair that kept falling off, but I wouldn't let it go for the life of me. So that's where I got my start.
We both played dwarves. Yes. What?
Oh, my. And then I went to school at Northern Illinois University in DeKalb, Illinois. And then I moved to Chicago, and I was there for years and years. And I studied at the Moscow Art Theater for a summer.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And then I moved here to Los Angeles almost exactly a year and a half ago. So this is my first full-length show in Los Angeles. I've been playing with the Backroom Shakespeare Project, LA chapter, which if you ever hear about them, it's a gas. One night only Shakespeare plays, no director, ton of fun. But this is my first full length here at the Fountain, and what a gift it's been. What a gift.
The college you went to in Illinois, what was that again?
Northern Illinois.
Northern Illinois. Northern Illinois University?
Yes.
Yes, I performed there.
Oh, really?
Yes. There was a time when we were based in Minneapolis. The Music Educators National Convention booked us to just tour certain colleges throughout the Midwest area. That's when we would have to drive through the snow up to Bemidji, Minnesota, when it was 20 degrees below zero.
Oh, my gosh.
To play. But, yeah, that was a fun time, too. So you're both here in L.A. permanently now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Once you get used to the weather, you will find you've only been here a year and a half or so.
Come on, I'm already a convert.
You can't leave. You can't leave. It's like, it's so great.
Did the COVID period knock you out of performing?
Well, that was actually where voiceover came in. That kept me at least living with text and also having a job. My husband and I set up a booth in our home, and we worked out of our closet for that
That's
time
a great,
period.
I know a number of people who work out of their closet, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have any closets in my apartment, so I actually built a booth out of a phone booth.
Nice!
But it's cool. It's a 1960s wood phone booth with glass doors.
Oh, yeah. Too bad you didn't get a British phone
booth. It's tiny. Oh, I know. It's tiny. But, yeah, it works. Well, you know, I had time on my
hands. Where did you find a phone booth?
Corona Del Mar, somewhere down there. Craigslist.
Oh, my God. I love that.
Yeah, crazy. I'll have to show you.
Now that you're midway through your run, have you – I was going to ask you, the first time you performed before an audience, did you do previews?
Yes, we did three previews. Yes.
So,
was it two? Like,
I think it was three.
No, it was three. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Yeah.
Yeah.
And those were with mics?
Yes.
Ah.
That was essential, and we were still getting notes at the end of those.
So I was wondering, how do you time the laughter, you know, reacting to the laughter, giving way to the laughter, making sure you don't step on somebody's laugh, a line or something?
I think I'm still learning that because of the headphones on the audience. I think I've had a couple of people mention they feel a little in their own worlds and so might not be laughing out loud.
Yeah.
But also we can hear some laughter through our earphones. I'm still learning the ebb and flow of it. Gotta breathe.
Yeah, and it really varies in the audiences. Sometimes we get this really serious audience that's really quiet. And then, you know, like a lot of times our Monday night audiences are just like yucking it up. And it's like, oh my gosh, no one ever laughed there before. I need to stop for a second, you know. You get used to it. It's really strange because I've got two of these things in my ears and I can still hear the laughter.
Oh, I have to remind everybody, we're nearing the end of the show, but following my show is Donna Walker, my producer. She has her own show, Pacifica Performance Showcase, and her guests today are actor, director, choreographer Debbie Allen. And they'll be on in about 4 minutes. I'm here, and it's my mic now. So, so you said that there's no immediate talk about an extension or moving the play or anything.
No, but we would love to if you know anybody or anybody out there. We just love working together with this cast, and
so
I think
true.
This is such an important play right now with all the LGBTQ backlash and the laws and the discrimination that's happening. This play has gotten a new relevance, I believe, you know, in this day and age, and is really important in the LGBTQ community, as well as there's not that many lesbian plays out there.
Yeah.
There really aren't.
That is true.
Yeah.
Is there other work that you're doing? Is there other shows that you're up for?
Not right now. I mean, right now we're in the middle of a writer's strike and potentially actors strike in TV films. So normally we're auditioning a lot more. Mm-hmm. But in a way, like Anne said, this summer has just been a gift to just be able to play and be out there with this wonderful cast and just really enjoy the show. So that's kind of my focus at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll see what happens in the fall, you know, as far as film and TV and whatnot goes.
Well, I have to remind everyone again, the show is Last Summer at Bluefish Cove. It runs through August 27th, Friday, Saturday, Sundays, and Mondays at 7 p.m. We are offering two pairs of tickets to any performance by calling 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735 or 818-985-KPFK. KPFK. Identify yourself as a member of the KPFK family, and we'll be delighted to give you a pair of tickets. You can also find out more about the play and what's happening at the Fountain Theater by going to www.fountaintheater.com. I want to thank you for being here at KPFK and being here on Arts and Review. This is my first show back after our long summer pledge drive, and I'll be back every Friday at 2 p.m. And stay tuned to Pacifica Performance Showcase featuring my host, Donna Walker. So take care. See you next week. Mm-hmm.